Welcome back to Sounds Unexpected, a podcast acting as a hike for ears. I'm your host, Morgan Schoonover, and today our episode features artists who are making work that involves speaking and narrative. It may come as no surprise that identity is an incredibly important topic today. In fact, it's the basis of this podcast. And along with identity are many conversations about voices and who is heard. This has taken an interesting spin in the sound world, as many female and non-binary artists have taken to including speaking in their work. You may have even noticed it already in previous episodes. There are many ways to use our voice, whether that's how we dress, who we vote for, or where we spend our money. And though these are, in fact, ways of speaking, they are fairly abstract. This isn't unlike the very nature of sound and music. Let's dive in with our first artist. Amy Salloway is an actor, writer, storyteller, and narrative performer based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Amy creates deeply personal, mostly true solo acts that range from short and spare to 75-minute long plays. After finishing college, Amy worked in theater as a way to engage with social change and acted in shows addressing topics such as poverty, the environment, abortion, and many more. While living in Seattle, Amy was inspired by practitioners who were breaking the fourth wall by performing with raw, honest content. When she moved back to Minneapolis, she began to create this work of her own. The underlying question in her work is, how do we find belief in our own existence? This is a live performance of I've Never Seen Anybody With This Problem Before.
Thank you all so much for being here. My name is Amy Salloway, and this story doesn't have ghosts or spirits in it. What it does have is the human body, and I think human biology is every bit as effing freaky as the paranormal. So here we go. In December of 2007, I had gone without health insurance for about 2 years, which was not a good thing because I had also gone without health. Yes, I have several chronic illnesses that require, you know, medication or a doctor's supervision, or ideally, in a perfect world, both. But that wasn't going to happen. So instead, I start going to a low-income walk-in clinic run by a very sweet and overburdened nurse named Joan. I will myself to not need the prescriptions that I've been dependent on for, you know, 30 years. And for the few drugs that I absolutely cannot go without and that are thousands of dollars out of pocket at Walgreens, I start turning to the world of overseas pharmacy websites. Yes. Sometimes the Solomon Islands have a really great sale on Zoloft, and it's really, buy one, get one, and it's really exciting, yes. So I tell Nurse Joan about this, and she says, Amy, let's change your thyroid medication from brand name Synthroid to generic. That's an easy change to make. It's $4 at Target, you know, that's right here in the US. And I am like, awesome, one less thing to shop for in Micronesia, great. But within 2 weeks of switching medications for hypothyroidism, something is terribly wrong. I'm waiting for the bus one day in sub-zero snowy weather, and I realize that I am boiling hot and sweating buckets. My hair is plastered to my forehead. The next time I put my winter coat on, I can't zip it. I have inflated like a balloon overnight. I realize that There's no delineation anymore between my face and my neck. Like, there's no gap. I stare in the mirror. I'm like, did I always look like this? Did I just not notice? I don't think I did. I am also simultaneously exhausted and yet buzzing with adrenaline, like a downed telephone wire, snapping and jittering as I lay useless on my bed. And my brain is so fogged that I can't remember the lines of my own solo show that I wrote and that I'm supposed to perform in 2 weeks. That is scary to me. I would start talking to people, and I would think the words I wanted to say in my head, and I would wait for them to travel down the brain pipeline and out my mouth. But when they came out, they were total gibberish, even more so than usual. I know, it's hard to imagine. Also, my hair starts falling out in torrents. Every time I shampoo and condition it in the shower, I end up with what I refer to as a drain gerbil. Even on days I don't, thank you. Even on days I don't wash it, when I reach up to touch my head, it sends a village of follicles plummeting to their deaths. I can see my bare white scalp through my forehead. Through my bangs. A see-through forehead would be weird. I think to myself, oh my God, I have cancer and no one has told me. And then I think, no, I am getting chemotherapy and no one has told me. Is that allowed? Like, shouldn't I have signed some papers? Luckily, even in the midst of this brain fog, I have the self-awareness to drag myself back to Nurse Joan and sputter, help, bad things, no hair, see-through forehead. And some phlebotomy is done. And the result, dun dun dun, is that I am one of some eensy segment of the population that has an allergic reaction to generic levothyroxine. Yes, basically, that generic thyroid chemical was pouring into my bloodstream and floating around in huge quantities, but never getting metabolized by my adrenal system, which gave me the symptoms of hyperthyroid and hypothyroid at exactly the same time. Thank you. Usually that kind of thing only happens to people who already have some extremely bad thyroid condition, like a goiter. That's all I need, a goiter. Hey, goiter Salloway. Oh, God. Nurse Joan writes a new prescription for $65 Synthroid and says, Amy, I have never seen anyone with this problem before. I have never seen anyone with this problem before is a sentence I've heard from the medical establishment my entire life. All around me, my friends and family would have simple, recognizable illnesses and accidents and injuries, the kind everyone around them could relate to and empathize with. Oh, a cold. Oh, a broken leg. While I had experiences that left me at all times in a finite, discrete set of one, feeling alone and isolated and freakish. Example, kindergarten. I am in my bedroom trying to pull on this navy blue Danskin turtleneck that I hate, but my mother is making me wear it. You guys remember Danskin? Yeah, okay. All right. So, like, I'm in it, and my neck's bent down, and my elbow is bent up, and all of a sudden, I feel this boing, and I scream in pain. My mother carts me off to the ER, still frozen inside the elastic of my shirt, like a palabolas dancer. I am told that I have pulled a trapezius muscle, which I don't think five-year-olds are even supposed to have trapezius muscles. I think they grow in later. later. And the emergency room doctor says, I have never seen anyone with this problem before. It takes about 10 months for the combination of hyper and hypothyroid symptoms to slowly, gradually fade away. The thing is, my hair loss doesn't stop. It should have stopped. It was supposed to stop, but it doesn't. It gets worse. I wear hats a lot. When I cook myself dinner, I pull hair out of the tuna casserole and the scrambled eggs. I RSVP no to all potlucks. I become my own dog. I love you. Please come to all my shows. Luckily, by this time, I have health insurance again, and I run to a primary care doctor. I write out the autobiography of my follicles, making sure to show, not tell, and include sensory detail. I put together charts and graphs and a PowerPoint presentation. There are more blood tests, and the doctor is concerned. Your hemoglobin is very low, your ferritin is normal, and your sed rate is extremely high, she says. Is that why my hair is falling out? Amy, these are the results we see when someone has a hidden source of blood leaching, a tumor, or aneurysm, or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Great, yep, that's nice. What about my hair? My hair, hair! Let's focus, people! Here is the deal. I have been fat my entire life, and one of the only things that has ever comforted me is that I always had a lot of hair. Hair that could hide my giant cheeks, disguise my rolls of neck, create top third balance to the middle and lower third lumps and rolls of bread dough body. I've had so much working against me physically. I am splotchy, scratchy, asymmetrical, awkward, and lumbering, and I have all these freaking maladies. We are full up with maladies. But my hair has been my security blanket. The one thing I could cling to. I can't lose it. I can't. Age 17, I wake up one morning in July to go to my summer job and fall out of bed, literally, because overnight the nerve in my right lower leg has snapped in half. In my sleep, with no provocation, which does not happen to sedentary non-athletes under the age of 70. I have to wear a leg brace for a year like Laura fucking Wingfield. I have never seen anyone with this problem before. I Google women's hair loss specialists in the Twin Cities. There is only one, a dermatologist who is in such demand, she's booked out a solid year and won't even see just anybody anymore. Like, patients have to actually apply to see her. I'm not sure what that means, like SAT scores, like submit a resume, audition, 16 bars of a song, a Shakespeare, and a contemporary, I don't know. I will do whatever it takes. I've already been documenting my hair loss for the past 3 years by taking progressive photos of myself with my hair in pigtails so one can see and measure the decline in pigtail diameter. So scientific. Now, in addition, I start collecting the drain gerbil after each hair washing, patting it dry, putting it into a labeled baggie, which then gets push-pinned to the wall in chronological order. Above countertop filled with vitamins and tinctures and dried sprigs and powders in glass jars. All I need is to draw a pentagram on the floor. I can start my own coven. I sip some ashwagandha tea and meditate upon the baggies and wait for an acceptance letter from the dermatologist. Age 24. Oh, we're going to get so close now. I have a yeast infection that refuses to go away. It lasts my entire first year of grad school. A year, people, thank you. Ladies, into my summer job acting in a children's theater company in the woods of New Hampshire in a tiny, tiny town. It gets so bad that I go to see the only doctor available for Miles, a town veterinarian. Who squeezes me in right after he delivers a calf. And gives me a bovine gynecological medication for the vaginas of cows. Everyone all together. I have never seen anyone with this problem before. Something to note, though, veterinary medicine and regular, you know, human doctors, no difference, really. I mean, truly, if you're in a bind. In the wee hours of the morning, I watch YouTube videos of people who have amazing physical disfigurements. There's Discovery Health, horrifying bodies, and world's worst rashes. I watch the story of the man who's turning into a tree. He's like super famous by now. And the young woman from Venezuela who lost her eyes and nose in a fire and is gonna get a full face transplant. I watch these videos to get it through my head that there are worse things than being a woman going bald. That I am being utterly vain and shallow and self-centered and ungrateful. I mean, I know I am. But I'm stuck inside myself. And I don't know how to evolve fast enough to deal with this. I discover a website about this doctor in Florida who's pioneered a radical new treatment for women's hair loss, in which he performs an autogenic blood transfusion into the scalp, so your own blood moved to a different location, and then pounds the scalp with what's basically a meat tenderizer. So a mallet with dozens of tiny metal spikes to circulate that blood to the surface. Women are told not to wash their hamburger heads for 3 days because the influx of hemoglobin is re-energizing the telogenic sectors. My first thought upon hearing this is, well, that sounds pretty doable. Freshman year of college, a benign tumor in my left salivary gland. Age 28, gum surgery that fails to take 9 times. Oh. Age 30, I get a piece of butterfly wing embedded in my cornea. And have to have it removed in the ER. I have never seen anyone with this problem before. Friend of 10 years, David, was going bald. He was a crunchy woo-woo hippie guy and didn't really care that his forehead was growing bigger. He compensated for it by growing the hair he still had longer, down his back into a little braid that ran down his peasant shirt. Like, one stalk of corn in a barren field. I loved his hair. I cared about it and thought it was beautiful, like the rest of him. And whenever I found him sitting still on our futon, I'd dash over and massage his scalp or do my own version of Reiki, willing his little strands with my hand energy to stay put, to love their home. And now I do the same thing for myself. Standing in my bathroom, pressing my hair to my head, I chant, please don't leave. Please grow back. And time goes on. And I pass the audition. I get to see the very special hair loss dermatologist who's sweet and kind and takes very close magnified photos of my scalp and says that she can see new hair growth. And that means my follicles still work. They're not dead. That is the thing. You do not want your follicles to be dead. And mine work. They're just differently abled. And in summary, says the mega special dermatologist, I've never seen anyone with this particular idiopathic chronic hair loss. It's a mystery. But I can tell you that you're not going to go completely bald. That won't happen. As long as you have live follicles, you'll have new hair growth. I comfort myself with these words all the time. 10 years after this mystery started, I still live in perpetual cycles of hair loss and regrowth. I still have days of panic and tears when I face the mirror. And if I happen to look marginally normal right now, it's because I work my ass off to do so. But more than that, I've worked my ass off to be okay with the fact that I'm a woman who sometimes has an almost bare scalp. I work my ass off to not feel alien and isolated and removed from my own body by the sentence echoing in my head, I've never seen anyone with this problem before. And I look at the women all around me on the bus, in the produce aisle, and in the theater row in front of me, and I see the truth that there is no norm of beauty, femininity, appearance, amount of hair or skin or body or health or ability, and it makes me angry that we're told there is. We are an endless collage of diversity. Full stop. That's it. If anyone out there needs about 60 pounds of all-natural, organic human hair packaged into individual servings, I can hook you up. Thank you.
Kelly Bornhoft is a visual artist based in Columbus, Ohio, whose work questions how humans experience climate change on a tangible scale. Her piece, Portage, uses narrative as a way to explore how the personal can make something distant feel palpable. We are about to hear Kelly tell us about Portage Lake, which was once Portage Glacier. She has chosen to whisper, perhaps the most fragile, vulnerable way to speak, making it a lovely metaphor for climate change.
Portage Lake wasn't always a lake. It used to be Portage Glacier. 40 years ago. was deceived the distance. Nothing ended before it was engulfed in white abyss. The only thing to measure was our strides, and we felt them in double. Knowing the farther we went would mean farther to return.
Jessica Hunt is a composer based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Her work explores text through narrative and sound. Today, we are hearing an electronic monodrama called This is a Test of the Emergency Emotional Overload System. Every sound in this piece was generated from Jessica's voice and body. As a composer with a chronic invisible illness, she sees this use of quote, non-default bodies, unquote, as an act of defiance. Additionally, this piece addresses the dissolution of emotional agency in social media. We hear the rawness of the human voice juxtaposed by the steady, methodical abilities of artificial intelligence.
This is a test of the emergency emotional overload system. It is only a test. If this were a verified emotional overload emergency, your personal social network's digital apathy management response protocols would be enabled. But this is only a test of the emergency emotional overload system. This is not a certified emotional overload emergency. Because this is only a test of the emergency emotional overload system, you should not experience an emotional response. If you begin to experience an emergency emotional overload response to this test of the emergency emotional overload system, your emergency emotional overload may not qualify as a verified emotional overload emergency event. During this test of the emergency emotional overload system, you will be subjected to a series of synthetic emotional responses grounded in original behavior. Looks like a great deal of colorful.
And remember, there is nothing to worry about, because this is only a test.
Words give us the potential to get personal and specific. The artists today show us that when non-binary and female artists use their voices, they empower both themselves and their demographics through sound. This prompts me to leave you with this. What are you saying lately? Thank you for listening to Sounds Unexpected. I'm your host, Morgan Schoonover. See you next time. Sounds Unexpected is made possible by KFAI in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You can learn more at kfai.org.